Had you just 2 days, you lazy animal? Man who sold you said you were fine. I don't like your ways, you lazy animal. You just stand around and blink your eye. Stubborn old mule, bought you for a song. Seems to me that brain you're supposed to have don't last for long. Doggone your soul, hide your ugly face from me. Hide your ugly face from me. Well, that was it. That was the opening. You don't seem very impressed. Sorry I went to all the trouble. Thank you for coming tonight to this soiree. Sit back, relax. That's what you've come for. To see a genius. Last night that got a belly laugh. If I do have a genius, it is for building up to a letdown. My life has been creative destruction. This business, I love it. I was born into it. I wasn't born in a trunk, not like Liza Minnelli. I love all that Yankee brushness. Born in a trunk in the Victoria Theatre. Yeah. I was born at home quite normally. It wasn't until after they saw me that they put me in a trunk. Success! I was born on the 12th of March, 1908, in Brixton, so as to be near my parents. Adding another to the motley collection of prose foregathered in that part of London. Wall's the name, Max Wall, close relation to the old sea walls of Grimsby. You've heard of the Great Wall of China? He was my grandfather. He was a brick. My father was Jack Lorimer, a Scottish character comedian performing songs and eccentric dancing. He was known as the Heelan Laddie, but maintained our Oriental possibilities by performing the Chinese Scotsman, complete with pigtail coolie wig and kilt. I'm half Scotch and half Chinese, as sure as eggs are eggs. And it didn't get a damn if me old pigtail keeps on tickling my legs. Oh, hi! His onstage charm belied a home life fraught with family feuds and hatreds. He escaped through compulsive drinking, which finally destroyed his health. He worked at a hectic pace even through the First World War, but was taken ill whilst performing. I happened to meet a boy in the street who quite casually said, "Shame your dad's dying, innit, Max?" I remember kneeling by the bed containing a human skeleton, which was all that was left of a once fine-looking, talented 6-foot Scot adored by the public, ravaged by bitter fights, and fights with bitter, whose life had come to a premature end at the age of 37. He died of galloping consumption, or what we now call tuberculosis, in 1920. My second wife once said to me, "You're supposed to be a funny man, why be so sad and miserable?" But my life hasn't been a very jolly affair. I've had my share of happiness, but mostly at times when I took it for granted. Mother's stage name was Stella Stahl, really Miss Mitchison from Newcastle upon Tyne. I loved her very much. Too much, I fear, for I trace all the upheavals in my life back to her overbearing, suffocating love and affection. She often said to me, "You must never get married. Your father was mad, and you are mad, and you could never make a good husband." Now, 3 wives and 3 divorces later, I see that perhaps she had a point. Her parents were also artistes of the music halls with a tempestuous relationship. Grandma Maudie was almost 2 feet shorter than her husband, Will. But during a row, she had been known to fetch a pair of steps and climb up them just to smack him in the face. We were all born into the spit and sawdust world of the halls, a long way from the loftily removed legits of the theatrical stages. For the common run of humanity, the music hall was the thing. All real, very real. The halls were just an extension of the working folks' pubs and clubs. They knew what they liked, applauding long, madly and loudly for any act that won their approval, whether jugglers, wire acts, dancing acts, or any other of the wines and spirits, as supporting acts were called, because they were so far down the bill they were almost down to the brewer's credit. Like the old theatre gag, when the Coast Guard asks an incoming boat, "What you got on board there?" And the captain replies, "Just a load of manure and two actors." At which point, one of the thespians turns to the other and says, "Will we never be top of the bill?" Isn't it strange that an audience will forgive a sportsman, musician, or even an actor who is mediocre, but not a comedian who isn't funny? We mountebanks and vagabonds of light entertainment have a weighty task, for to make the world laugh is a grave responsibility. As happens in the circus, we music hall children grew up as part of the theatrical scene. We'd listen to pro talk, visit dressing rooms, and watch them all from the wings, so it wasn't long before you had grease paint in the bloodstream. My first stage appearance was at the age of 2, alongside my father in a matching wee kilt. The public adored seeing the small son or daughter of a popular entertainer on stage with their parent. It was all part of what was once called showmanship. I was looked after by many aunts and uncles in the wings, amongst whom was the great Mari Lloyd. I saw Little Titch perform. I saw Chung Ling Su and Will Fife. But there are no halls left now, and very little grease paint, and very few wings for pros' kids to stand in. When the war broke out in 1914, our family consisted of my elder brother Alec and a delightful, angelic, almost fairy-like younger brother whom we affectionately called Bunty. Father and mother were away touring the halls in South Africa for some of the time, and we were looked after by Aunt Betty at our home in Brixton. I remember watching how one night a German Zeppelin was shot down by the anti-aircraft over London. It made a great spectacle in the night sky and brought people cheering onto the streets. My older brother Alec and I were sleeping together in a large iron bedstead and heard none of the commotion, but before being destroyed, the Zeppelin had discharged an aerial torpedo and a gas bomb, both of which arrived at the same point, our home in Baytree Road, Brixton. We were buried in the rubble of the house, our lives saved from the torpedo by being trapped under the upturned bedstead. I can still hear the sound of the rescuers digging and clearing away the rubble, glimpsing chinks of light through the chaos of collapse. The gas bomb, however, fell on that portion of the property where our little Bunty was sleeping with Aunt Betty. They were both gassed. I escaped with only superficial injuries, although I carry the scars to this day in more ways than one. I must get a room tonight. Get it? Room. Room. Quick. Yes. Timing, you see. Quick. Not funny, but quick. The ship on which our parents were travelling at the time was nearing its home port when word of the catastrophe reached them. Father was already in a bad way with drink and the DTs, and Mother became hysterical. When she reached the wreckage of our home, she trudged all over it, desperately trying to find a particular fur coat. The art of the clown is to demonstrate the absurdities of life, but sometimes life imitates art more effectively, don't you think? With no homestead, the family had to split up. My brother Alec and I lived with our ailing father and his family, whilst Stella moved in with the man she met whilst touring South Africa with my father. He was called Harry Wallace, an Orthodox Jew who eventually became my stepfather when Dad died in 1920. After his death, my mother and her new husband took on a pub in Essex, and here I endlessly practiced my unorthodox dancing and tricks, for the halls were in my veins as surely as the alcohol and vitriol had been in my dad's. I was determined to prove myself to everyone entirely on my own merits, So when I was 14, and a small touring show came to the local cinema where I was an assistant projectionist, I auditioned for their Christmas tour. The result was that I was engaged for £4 a week to play split weeks in Devon and Cornwall throughout the Christmas season as the son of Mother Goose, played by one of our finest pantomimists, George Lacey. Since then, I've played many pantomimes. A welcome winter respite from the endless touring of comedy and cabaret. Pantomime is the repository of our visual comedy. Where circus has maintained clowning and variety on the continent, here it's been preserved in the annual Christmas romp, where red-hot pokers, slosh routines and runarounds are as much a part of the fooling as they were in Dan Leno or even Joey Grimaldi's day. After the tour, I returned home to the pub, triumphant and full of tales with which to impress the old farmers on market day. But they only came to drink and play Shove Ha'penny with ferrets stowed in their pockets. Still determined to make progress in the business on my own merits and without using my father's famous music hall name of Lorimer, I decided that I should adopt a stage name. So I combined the first part of my Christian name, Maxwell, and the first part of my stepfather's surname, Wallace, to become Max Wall. I was billed as the boy with obedient feet like Dan Leno before me, and performed acrobatic dance wherever and however I could, round the halls of England, in minstrel shows, pantomimes, and even occasional trips to the continent, where I worked alongside the incomparable clown, Grock. Twice nightly in front of audiences, working on stage from 10 in the morning on new tricks, new steps, and new routines, I was a fanatic. And if anything seemed impossible, I decided to do it. By 1925, I was in my first West End show at the Lyceum. It was the start of everything, and everything has happened to me. If I sawed a woman in half, I'd get the half that eats. As you know, one thing leads to another, an absurd train of connections of people, time, and place. Life is like Spaghetti Junction, whose map you can now see etched into my face. But then, back then, it was all before me. Everything was uncharted, with monsters as well as treasures to be encountered along the way.
Stubborn old mule, can't just make you out. Seems you never use your ears the way I scream and shout. Dung on your soul, hide your ugly face from me. Hide your ugly face from me.